Of all the art forms, there's something special and strange about music. No painting, no sculpture, no book has the power to make people jump up and down or croon in the shower the way music does. We feel music in our bones and in our stomachs, but it all starts in the mind. Neurologist Dr. Oliver Sacks has spent his career writing about how the brain makes sense of the world. His books include the bestsellers Awakenings and The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And his latest book is all about music. It's called Musicophilia: Tales of Music and the Brain. Hi, Dr. Sacks.
Hi to you.
Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
So you write, listening to music is not just auditory and emotional, it is motoric as well. Or as Nietzsche wrote, we listen to music with our muscles. Why does music reach us so deeply on such an animal level?
Well, there are special parts of the brain which connect the auditory and the motor so that we automatically keep time with music, or we move to the rhythm of music. You know, all children do this spontaneously. No chimpanzees do so. This is a purely human thing. But music also seems to have an emotional power beyond that of language. And I think, again, this is partly due to the very close connections between the musical and the emotional parts of the brain and the memory parts of the brain.
Yeah, you write about how music can have these amazing curative powers. Will you tell me about how music has helped patients with Tourette's syndrome? I found that part of your book fascinating.
Right. Well, people with Tourette's syndrome tend to make sort of sudden tics and jerks and convulsive movements which are not coordinated, and they're sort of out of sync with other people. But there was one amazing encounter here in New York when I went to a drum circle for people with Tourette's syndrome, and there were 20 or 30 young people with Tourette's all sort of ticking and lunging out of sync. But as soon as the drum beat came, they all accompanied this and they all became synchronized, and you sort of saw the primal bonding power of music, that rhythm holds things, holds people together.
Why does that happen? Why does music make the Tourette's stop or cease?
Basically, I think it's the necessity to keep time to music. And so if you have Tourette's, it gives you something else, something external to keep time to.
I like the story in your book about when you had an injury and you had to get yourself down an icy mountain in the dark, and you actually kept time to keep yourself calm, right?
Well, it was more than that. I'd sort of got a bad leg injury and I couldn't use the leg, and I was sort of heaving myself down with my arms in a very clumsy, laborious way. And then suddenly the Volga Boatman song just came into my mind.
Of course,
you know,
it did.
Sort of, yo, heave ho. And this, it coordinated my movements. It synchronized me. I think it sort of saved my life. At least it got me to a lower part of the mountain where I was rescued.
And then music helped you heal after that accident, right? Will you describe that?
I had to have surgery to the leg. Sort of nerves were quite damaged. I couldn't use the leg for 2 weeks. And then when I was stood up, I'd sort of forgotten how to walk. At least walking didn't come spontaneously to me. I made some clumsy attempts to move the leg. And there again, music seemed to come spontaneously and by itself. In fact, I'd been given a tape of some of the Mendelssohn violin concerto, but I think it could have been any music. But that suddenly came into my mind and I found myself walking with it. And again, I think this is this sort of magic connection between sound and motion, listening with one's muscles.
But you are a musical person. So do you think that somebody else with a similar, who's maybe not musically inclined or wasn't listening to Mendelssohn, might have a similar experience to help heal?
I think this is universal, and I've seen similar things in many, many patients, some of whom are quite unmusical. I remember one old woman who'd broken a hip and it had seemed to have mended okay, but she never really got the use of it. But she said, yeah, the leg moved if she heard an Irish jig, and that was the
clue. Was she Irish?
She was very, very Irish, right? Yeah. So we gave her Irish jigs, and that got her going.
We have just about a minute before the break, and I wanted to talk about the White Christmas effect. We are upon Christmas. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, when White Christmas was popular, the Bing Crosby, tests were made in which the volume was turned down and people say they still heard it. Now, this is a sort of filling in, and experiments have been done now, knocking out a bar of a familiar piece, and people do not notice it. But if you record from their brain, you find that the auditory cortex, the hearing part of the brain, shows sudden activity as the brain invents music in place of perception.
Dr. Sachs, we need to take a break, so please stay with me. In a minute, I want to hear how you think human beings first invented music. And we have our own music coming up from St. Vincent. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm talking with Dr. Oliver Sachs about music and the brain and his new book, Musicophilia. Dr. Sachs, you're a neurologist, so bring us into the brain. How physically does music have these miraculous effects on us?
Music affects many different parts of the brain. There's no musical center. There are 20 or 30 different parts of the brain which respond to pitch, to rhythm, to melodic contour, to harmony, to timbre, to all sorts of aspects of music. And all of these get orchestrated together. And this way the brain creates music from what one hears. The human brain is specially tuned to deal with very rapid, complicated streams of sound, whether it's speech or music. But music seems to be inseparably connected with the emotions and with emotional parts of the brain. And although recognizing the music is a cognitive perception, responding to the music is something which I think everyone does, which is why I call the book Musicophilia, love of music.
And sometimes, as you write about in your book, it can be downright annoying. When you write about the brain worms, those jingles that get stuck in our heads, like for me, it's always that stupid song, you know, all I want to do is have some fun, that song. You call these things cognitive, infectious, musical agents.
Oh, they've been called that. Yeah, the German musical industry called these Ohrwurms, earworms in the 1980s. I tend to call them brain worms. But I think all of us, even relatively unmusical, musical people have tunes which involuntarily play in the mind, often very pleasantly and associated with one's mood or one's thoughts or something people have said. But there's also a sort of pathological form of this when a fragment of music will keep playing itself hundreds of times and one can't stop it. And indeed, if you do functional brain imagery, you can see this thing going round and round in a sort of little electrical vortex, like a sort of little parasite, a little nasty infectious agent.
So that's what it is. When you can look at it in the brain, and it's just like a
electrical. I mean, with functional brain imagery, you can pick up when people are listening to music, imagining music, have a brain worm, or hallucinating music, or composing music. You can see all of these things.
Can you just knock them on the side of the head, Dr. Sachs, to get the brain worms to
Well,
stop?
They may try knocking themselves and jumping up and down or splashing water on the face or thinking of some other music. You know, people have to find their own ways with brain worms.
What's yours? Do you have a recurring one?
I have lots of them at the moment since this is Hanukkah.
Yes.
We've been lighting the lights. There's a song one sings called Mo Atzur, and this keeps going through my mind.
Can I have a line?
No.
Please. Spread the brain worm. If you spread the worm.
I'm too shy to sing, but what I can do, if you want, is to put it in C major and say C, C, G, C, F, E, D, C, G, A, D, E, F, E, D, C.
Okay. You just gave it away. Now you cured yourself of it. And it'll be worming around in other people's brains.
Okay, yes.
Do you think that the ubiquity of iPods is changing our musical universe? Do you think we're getting more brain worms because music's everywhere?
Well, certainly. I mean, one can get as much music in a week as someone of the 15th century had in a lifetime now. And I don't know that the brain is equipped to deal with so much music, especially at high volume. And a lot of people turn up the volume of iPods to drown out the external world. I think that's sort of dangerous, and it's especially dangerous if you're in traffic because you're completely engrossed in this thing and you walk in front of a car, and I think it can give one brain worms as well.
I want to go back in time here to human prehistory, you know, to the dawn of music. Let's say you and I are sitting around a campfire, maybe with some sticks or bones or hollow logs we bang on. What do we do now? How do we invent music?
People have imagined all sorts of scenarios. Darwin wrote about this, and he thought that singing was invented as a form of courtship, and then kept by sexual selection. I think very much more in terms of rhythm, and this reaction to rhythm seems to be so primal. And I think if just anyone starts, starts banging on a drum or making some sort of noise, this will bond all the people together in a campfire. I think rhythm tends to come probably before melody. And I think in African music, you can have a tremendous development of rhythm, not yet melody.
You know, we like to say that humans are the only animals with music, but what do you make of bird song?
Or whale song? This can be very tuneful, but I think it's relatively fixed. I think birds have particular repertoires or particular codes which may signal sort of desire or aggression or whatever. And whereas with us, music is hugely flexible and I think can express almost any feeling. And I don't think birds ever deviate from the formula, whereas with us, music is an evolving thing. It's different in every culture. It exists in every culture. It has hundreds of different uses from, martial music, religious music, lullabies, lyrical music, whatever.
Dr. Sachs, did you ever court anyone in song?
No, I didn't, because I'm too shy to sing.
Thank you so much for joining me.
I've enjoyed it.
Oliver Sachs is a physician and professor of clinical neurology and psychiatry at Columbia University. His most recent book is called Musicophilia, Tales of Music in the Brain. For more about him, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.